Good morning, or evening, or afternoon, wherever you are. This is Pamela Fagan Hutchins, and you've reached Wine, Women, and Writing, where we talk with writers about their stories with complex, authentic females at their cores, as well as the real-life issues those are based upon that translate into great reads. And we do it with a lot of humor, occasional dive into profanity, some oversharing, irreverence, and vast quantities of wine, coffee, or whatever gets us through another day. Today, we're doing the show early in the morning, so I have put away last night's mango chili margarita and have coffee instead. I'm, as I said, Pamela Fagan Hutchins. I write the Silver Falchion Best Mystery Winning and USA Today Bestselling What Doesn't Kill You Romantic Mysteries, and that is a mouthful, by the way. You can learn more about them on my website, PamelaFaganHutchins.com. You can also check out the massive giveaway I'm doing on my blog in honor of the release of Shock Jock this week. Thank you to everyone that's reading that little nugget, and my upcoming novel, Livewire, which you can and should pre-order everywhere online right now. Speaking of right now, I'm reading Anne Weisgarber's The Glovemaker, which is exquisite. She'll be on the show next week, but today I'm talking to debut novelist Elizabeth Clayfoth about her thriller, her new release, All These Beautiful Strangers. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
Well, I am excited to have you. I guess I read your book through my ears. I listened to it on audio a couple of months ago, and it really was edge of your seat, really a wonderful psychological thriller. So kudos to you. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
When was your release?
So it came out July 10th of last year.
Fantastic. And I think Elizabeth and I talked just a smidge before we got on air, and we're Facebook friends. So I'm not a stalker when I say that I am excited to have seen your engagement photos recently.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I ended up getting engaged to my fiance June 2nd, so about a month before the book came out. So it's been very exciting, and we're in the middle of, you know, the wedding planning madness right now. So
both things in 1 year.
It's a milestone year for sure.
I don't know how you top that in the future. I guess you have like Pulitzer Prize winning release and have a baby in the same month or something, I guess. I don't know.
Exactly.
So tell me about All These Beautiful Strangers. And for the readers that haven't read it yet, give them a little teaser.
Sure. So All These Beautiful Strangers is a psychological suspense novel. It follows a young girl named Charlie Calloway. She's 17 years old. She comes from a very wealthy family, and she's attending an elite boarding school up in New Hampshire, and she's trying to join this secret society at her school called the A's. In order to get in, she has to play this semester-long high-stakes scavenger hunt game that's meant to really test her and kind of put everything she cares about on the line. At the same time, Charlie's kind of still recovering from a tragedy she experienced in her past. So when she was very young, her mother, Grace Calloway, disappeared from the family lake house, and Charlie was the last one to see her. And her father was kind of always implicated in her mother's disappearance, but nobody really had any answers of what happened there. So Charlie's kind of carried that trauma with her entire life. And fairly early on in the novel, she's approached by her uncle, her mother's older brother, who has recently discovered a set of intriguing photographs from beneath the floorboards of her parents' bedroom that kind of forced Charlie to question, you know, what really happened that summer, and go on this quest to, you know, really solve the mystery of her mother's disappearance. So the novel is told primarily from Charlie's point of view, but also we get the point of view of her parents, Alistair Calloway and Grace Calloway, from the time that they meet until the day that Grace disappears. So it kind of cuts back and forth between past and present and the different points of view.
one of the things that I appreciated as a person who did this via audio about your book was that the points of view switches and the timeline switches weren't confusing. They made sense. Especially with psychological thrillers, sometimes it can get a little choppy. I think you did that masterfully, and I wanted to thank you for it.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. I think one thing that kind of helped me keep it pretty fluid is I actually wrote the book in the order that the chapters appear. So I didn't write like all the past narratives, you know, together, and then the present day. I kind of wrote it in the order that the reader reads it. And for me, that was really important to do because it's kind of hard to keep straight, you know, when the reader knows what.
Yeah.
So I think that really helped in keeping the point of view shifts like very fluid.
Well, I was also aware that you have done your time as a writing instructor. And is that, is that something that you did just because you were writing the book and it's what felt right when you were doing it? Or did it come from your learning and from what you taught other students on how to piece together something like this?
So the reason I did writing instruction actually started because I did my MFA in creative writing. And part of that program, I got to teach composition and fiction writing to students. So that's kind of how I got into that. But I do think that, you know, really teaching writing, like from a teacher's perspective and having to look at writing in a very analytical way and kind of break down, you know, what is the author doing? Why are they doing it? How are they doing it? I think that definitely helps you as a writer to kind of do those things yourself and implement that on the page.
Yeah, I get, and I'm sure that you get 10 times as much as me since you have the direct exposure to students, but I get a lot of young people saying, you know, I want to write a novel. And sometimes by young people, I mean 12, 13, 14 years old. I want to write a novel. And, you know, we talk about the importance of education, but what I also stress so much to them is the importance of practice, finding your groove and your first million words and that eventually those things become clear, but you have to find your own groove, the way that it works for you.
Exactly. And I think something that really helped me was starting with the short story rather than the novel. So I always wanted to write novels and I knew that, but the MFA program that I attended, it was very workshop based and it's a lot easier to workshop a short story, which is complete, it's contained, you can talk about it, you know, in a couple hours and kind of dissect everything. And you have to do everything in a short story that you do in a novel. You know, you have to have a complete plot, you have to have character development, you have to have suspense. So I think that really helped to kind of hone my skills in a shorter format. And then when it came time to actually write a novel, I feel like I had all the tools in my toolbox at that point because I had kind of mastered how to write a short story first.
I think that's a great point. I've got a good friend who's a mystery writer, and actually she's going to be on the show later this spring, and she, in her MFA program, left with a lot of nuggets, with a lot of flash fiction and short stories that later she turned to and said, okay, you had a piece of my heart. I can do you further now because I already know from a big, you know, looking down on you from 40,000 feet view who you are, but now let me dive in. And
exactly.
Your BFA in creative writing, I had a daughter that went to Chapman. Did you enjoy Chapman?
I did. I loved Chapman.
My daughter did too. She was a swimmer there, not a writer, but she absolutely loved it. And as a parent, I certainly loved visiting and admired that they had so many great programs for the arts. They were well endowed for that. So what a great alma mater. And then such a switch to go to Indiana for Indiana University. What'd you think?
Very different experience, going to grad school. The MFA program at IU is fantastic. They only accept, 6 fiction writers a year. So it's a very small, program. So you get a lot of attention. And I, you know, I feel very indebted to that program. I don't know that I would have come out as strong a writer if I hadn't gone there and been exposed to the teachers there, the other students. I felt like I really grew in my time there.
What an incredible honor and experience to be part of such an elite program. Mm-hmm. Well, it sure shows in what you're writing. Of course, it all comes back to where the ideas for stories come from, because I've met a lot of good mm-hmm. writers that have trouble honing their storyteller art, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful sentences, beautiful paragraphs, but can't put together the whole package. And clearly, you have it soup to nuts, you know, from idea through delivery. Where'd you come up with your story and your characters?
Sure. So I started writing this, I want to say May of 2015. And it was right after HBO had come out with this true crime documentary called The Jinx, about Robert Durst. And if you're not familiar with that story, Robert Durst comes from a very wealthy real estate family up in New York. And I think it was in the 70s or 80s, he had married a girl from a blue collar family, very different backgrounds. And she went missing a few years into their marriage from their family lake house. And he was always, you know, very implicated in her disappearance, but they never found her and they could never prove, you know, what had happened to her. And that story just kind of grabbed me. I was actually working on a completely different novel at the time, but there was something about that story that I just found very, very compelling. And I sat down and I wrote what became, and pretty much still is, the prologue for the book, written from the perspective of a young girl who's kind of looking back at this, at what she thought was a very idyllic childhood spent with her, you know, loving parents at their lake house, you know, very dreamlike, very perfect. And then something kind of shatters that illusion, and that's the discovery of these photographs that were unearthed beneath the floorboards of her parents' room that kind of caused her to question everything. So that sort of grabbed me, and then I kind of went from there. And another actually true crime story that really influenced me was the O.J. Simpson case. So when I moved to Los Angeles, I moved to a neighborhood called Brentwood, and I live actually a couple blocks down from where Nicole Brown Simpson was murdered. And so I, you know, walk by that house on the way to the grocery store. When I'm running at night, I always walk by that spot. And I was very young when that happened. I was in kindergarten. And I kind of always identified with the children who were kind of thrust into this very public spotlight. And, you know, not only are they going through this terrible trauma of losing their mom in such a violent way, but their dad's implicated in it. And they have to go through that in a very public way. And so that kind of also weaved its way into the story. And I feel like, you know, Charlie sort of embodies that of, you know, having her mom taken from her, having her father sort of implicated, and then having all of that play out in a very public way because of who her family is.
That's super interesting about the Simpson kids as an influence in the story. And I can really see that that now. The angle that is the East Coast and the private schools, that came from the more how you were influenced originally by the story, I would guess. Or are you from the East Coast?
No, I'm from the Midwest, actually. So the East Coast, I felt like, was really the place that I should set this, because I wanted it to feel like very old money and kind of sort of gothic in some of the architecture. I thought that lent itself to a very nice atmosphere for the story. So that's kind of why it was set there.
So no private school in your background and no no A's?
No private school. Nope.
So, you know, as I think about the development of female characters, and especially when you take a book like yours, which, I don't know, 10 years ago we might have called YA, but now women of all ages read books that are primarily from the point of view of I always say, girls my kids' age that are late teenagers or early 20s. So a very young girl, truthfully, someone has lived a lot more life than people her age normally live. And I found the way in which, the way in which her relationship with her father changed over the course of the book fairly interesting. You know, obviously the relationship with her mother now is about finding out what it could have been because she lost her, but she still got this man who she had faith in up until this but I thought that was interesting. So do you want to speak a little bit about her relationship with her dad?
Yeah, I mean, I think something that was really important to me throughout this book was the question of, you know, how well can you really know somebody, even the people closest to you? You know, and I remember when I was very young and I had this realization that, oh, my parents were people before me, you know, like they were kids once, they had this whole life before I came along, but I don't know, you know, a ton about. And so I kind of wanted to play with that aspect of familiar strangers, you know, these people around you, like your parents or your family, who you may spend day in and day out with and should be very close to you, but, you know, how well can you really know them or can you really know somebody? So I think that was a very important sort of question that I played with throughout the book. And I think you see Charlie constantly, you know, as she's trying to figure out who she is, trying to figure out who her parents are and how that might impact who she is. So I think she has a lot of fear. You know, she wants to trust her father and she wants to love her father, but I think she has this fear of, you know, maybe what he's capable of or what he's done, and what does that mean for her and who she is? Does she have some of that in her as well? So, you know, and I think that one of the central questions for any young adult novel, it's, you know, very much a coming of age and trying to navigate the world and figure out who you are and your place in it. So I think that was very important to Charlie as a character and just the book overall.
Yeah, and you know, you expect that she doesn't know who her mother is and is constantly being thrown into that question of whether or not her mother's disappearance was the ultimate betrayal by her mother or by someone else close to her. But the father, you know, is the trust figure, her best friend, her boyfriend, everything to her is something she has to re-examine as the book goes on.
Yeah.
So a lot being thrown at her. So what are you working on now? What comes next after this book?
So I'm working on my second novel at the moment. It's going to be a young adult book that follows a young girl in Los Angeles. And it's going to be in a similar vein to All These Beautiful Strangers, and that it's very much a psychological suspense. And it starts with a very tragic thing happening and this question of whether the central character was involved in it or not. And then that kind of unravels throughout the story. So that's all I'll say on it for now, because it's still fairly early days, but that's what I'm working on.
As a mystery writer, I related very much to what you were writing, because it was a dead body and an amateur sleuth, female amateur sleuth that had to solve the mystery, but it was a very old dead body, 15 years old. So this next one, it sounds like, will have some elements of that as well, a death and someone having to solve from the perspective of, it's not me, please let it not be me. It's hard to get these books done when you're still working a day job. I don't think people realize how hard it is for young writers, especially when you're trying to juggle breaking into something where you are a fantastic success, but that doesn't yet translate into, I am financially independent of my other life.
Yep.
So you're still working full time, huh?
Still working full time. So right after I left my MFA program, I got a job as a curriculum writer for an online traffic school. So writing driver education courses and things like that. So it kind of combined, you know, the teaching I was doing with the writing that I wanted to do. And then I've been there for a little over almost 5 years now. So I kind of transitioned more into management, and now I don't really do any writing in my day job. I'm a product development manager, so I, you know, manage a team of software engineers and graphic designers and all that. So it's very, it's kind of nice though, because it exercises a different part of your brain, I think, than writing does. And I think actually sometimes having less time to write makes me more productive as a writer, because, you know, I'll sit down in the evenings after work or on the weekend, and I know my time to write is limited. And so that makes me be, I think, a little bit more productive than if I had endless time to write.
Absolutely. And I'm a big believer in that we have to be careful as writers. And I say this in a not very self-aware way as I think about my lifestyle, not to hermit mm-hmm. ourselves away from human contact, because mm-hmm. your ability to depict, you know, authentic, complex characters comes from knowing authentic and complex people and understanding yep. them. And management is a great way to do that, because you have to learn mm-hmm. what your coworkers tick and how to motivate people and become a student of human behavior.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, I wish you the best on not only continued success with this really, really psychologically addictive book, but mm-hmm. your next one as you're writing it, and your upcoming wedding, and your job, and Aww. All that you have on your plate, girl.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Tell everybody real quickly how they can get their hands on a copy of your book and learn more about you.
So my book is available on kind of wherever books are sold. So it's in Barnes and Noble's and independent bookstores, and you can also find it online on Amazon.
Awesome. And your website is... I have it open in a tab, I think. no, I don't. That's smart. Is it just ElizabethClayfoth.com?
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm.
So Clayfoth is KLEHFOTH.com. And the book is All These Beautiful Strangers. I hope you guys will go out and get a copy. I highly recommend it. You can write to Elizabeth or write to me and let us know what you think. I always love to hear from you guys on what you thought about the books that we covered on the show. So before we take off here, I wanted to remind you that there are lots of great past episodes that you can get to in audio and video format through my website, PamelaFaganHutchins.com, where you can also see the schedule of upcoming guests. I love it if you get these books ahead of time and read along with me, so that when we get to the show, it's Pamela's personal book club, and I'm asking the questions that you have in your mind after you've read it. Be sure while you're out there that you check out the upcoming releases that I have in the series. Pick up a copy of Shock Jock. And we will have Ann Weisgarber on next week. So Elizabeth, again, thank you for being here, and everybody.
Well, thank you for having me.
Everybody out there, I'll catch you next week.